That's a great
one where we're all very disjointed and everything else like that, but we love it, and obviously people love it because the number of people listening seems to go up by the episode, so thank you for that. We're not in a really great mood tonight because at Deepdale up north, it finished Preston North End 2 City 0. This is a Preston team that had lost 4 out of their last 5 games. They'd had no clean sheets at home prior to today, but you guessed it, good old City, anybody on a run they'd rather get rid of. We're pretty good at getting rid of it. As you can tell, I'm not sounding very happy today. Take the West Ham game out of it. You know, that's 1 point from the last 3 league games. No goals scored. Not great. Liam Manning's 15 points from 12 games in charge. 1.25 points a game, as Tomo told me. That works out less than what Nige was getting. And he was gotten rid of because he wasn't making the most out of so-called top 6 side. There we go. Joining me, Mark and Ian. As we do, both of you, you first, Ian. Thoughts at 5 minutes to 5 off on the final whistle?
Incredibly disappointed. The only reason I'll criticise Liam Manning less than I did Nigel Pearson in the end was because he hasn't had 2.5 years and he hasn't had any and he hasn't had any windows. So these players are very much Nigel Pearson's players. He wants to play in a completely different, in a different way, possession dominated, but you have to go somewhere with it. At the moment, we haven't got the players to play it. And so what he needs to do is adapt. I've been suggesting for months and getting on everybody's nerves, I'm sure, that we go 4-1-3-2. We've got the players to do it. Now, when I say adapt, I mean adapt with the players that he has, not with some imaginary players that are going to come in, unless they do come in. We know that the players we're looking for a Brian Tinian type midfield player who's creative and attacking. We're looking for a striker who can hold the ball up. Now, if we want to go on playing one up top, those are two that we absolutely desperately need. But until we've got those, please, Liam, try something else, because I don't think we've scored in 4 league games. So we need to do something else.
Three games, three league games.
Right. Okay. Well, we got a goal at West Ham, didn't we? So I'm of the opinion that I won't criticise him as much. What I will criticise him heavily for today is his lack of a reaction to their substitutions. Ryan Lowe tried to win that game. Liam Manning went for steady as she goes, and it was anything but, because their subs were 100% effective, and they beat up our back four. And we didn't have the players in the team to get the ball back either. So it's not just... People look at lack of goals and immediately blame the strikers. It's not that. It's lack of creativity, lack of chances, lack of service, some really bad decision-making from people like Mometi. Taylor Gardner-Hickman today, all he's got to do is pass the ball 3 yards. Tommy's in on goal. What's he do? Running himself in and put a crap shot in that my missus could have saved. It's not just the people up front. I thought our wide players were ineffective in the main, particularly in the second half. And if they're not adding anything, leave them out and play the different formation I suggested. I've been doing it for months. Sorry, but that's how I feel.
Okay, good. That's all those words are a euphemism for shit, basically. Then, Mark, what did you think? I mean, you gave me a statistic before we went live, which is quite telling, isn't it? Yes, but what were your thoughts on the final whistle?
Yeah, the statistic, just to get that out of the way, is City lie in 18th place for goal scores with 30, and for goal conceded, we're 6th with 30 conceded. That means we conceded less goals than Ipswich and Southampton that lie in 2nd and 3rd. The other 4 of the top 6 have conceded less than us, but that is it. So our problem is scoring goals. It's also decision making in the final third. We didn't play of any intensity today, like we did against West Ham, when we were on a sea of emotion and carried by 62,000 or 9,000 Bristolians last week. But if you don't score when you're on top in any division, you invite pressure. That and the fact that we faded very badly in the second half meant that we just got done by a big striker and another two. So it was Keane, Frokhai Jansen and Rhys that made all the difference. I don't think our subs would have made any difference because if we're playing in the same style, we just didn't have the players. We didn't have the quality to make any difference. That was the problem today, and that's something we've got to address. We've got to get somebody in who can score a goal, somebody who can play with his back to goal, who the ball can stick to. If you saw the simple things that Keane did when he came on, we don't seem to have a player that can do that, you know, and somebody who can do, you know, who can open up defences in that pocket. Everything seems, I mean, Jason Knight is our only player who seems to make things happen. I wouldn't say he's a creative midfield player, but he is somebody who can play midfield and the front. And the chances fall to him, but you want a striker on the end of those, ideally. But that's it. Therein lies the problem. So if City can address their goal scoring problem, that might make a difference. Yeah. But we need to make some moves in the market. Otherwise, we're just going to bump along in mid-table.
Yeah.
Or we could go backwards, but we're not going to get relegated. But if you want to see a change, recruitments are needed urgently. As simple as that. Okay.
Ian, you had your hand up there. What were you going to add to what Mark said?
Well, if you look at two of Jason Knight's attempts today, they went in row Z. Everything about his body position in shooting was wrong. First half and second half, 20 foot over the bar, leaning back, non-kicking foot, nowhere, anywhere near the ball. Awful. The weight of his passing and the time of his passing was wretched. So there's people down there, they get picked on. George Tanner's one, and I'm having a chat with people on the text feed. He's a duty scapegoat, George. Because second half, I thought Viner and Dickey were quite poor. But once again, is that the manager not sending on? If you want to play three at the back, we have McCrory on the back, on the bench. Get him on, and he can do 30 minutes as a right centre back. Move Viner and Dickey along one. Then you've got three against three. Then you've got your fullbacks. So it's a lack of thought and a lack of reaction. I don't mind. Look, I've been a City fan for over 50 years. I'm quite used to losing and losing heavily. But we can't make excuses for players. We can't make excuses for players' lack of technical skills, because players should be able to pass and shoot. One of our players missed, I can't remember who it was, misplaced a pass when he was 3 yards away from Joe Williams towards the end of the second half.
I mean, yeah, there was a couple
and
of
that's
dead
just
balls.
Rotten.
There was a couple of dead ball situations as well towards the end. And yeah, what was the point of making two substitutions with 2 minutes to go as well? You know, the substitutions.
Yeah, that
well,
was
apart
fairly
from appearance
stupid.
Money. I don't get it. It's a complete waste of time. And they weren't going to do anything anyway, really. I think unless it's just to ratchet up their appearances, absolutely nothing. It makes no sense.
No. No, I mean, looking at the lineup, it's sort of the team sort of picks itself. Andy Vyman not in the matchday squad today. We can talk more about him and other transfers later on. 8 on the bench, but good to see Ross McCrory coming back. I thought he looked a little bit leggy for the time that he was on. He's obviously a unit, as others have said on there. Hayden Roberts back in the squad as well. But if you looked at that squad, that bench, McCrory, James, Cornick, King, Wells, Roberts on there, and Knight LaBelle. Only Knight LaBelle is probably the baby on there, but it was a strong benchmark, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's brilliant to see Ross McCrory back after all of his health problems this season. Little cameo on Twitter for the under-23s. He looked really positive. And Hayden Roberts as well after his ankle problems. So, yeah, strong bench. We can only count up to 8 still, but there you go. But I'm not too worried about 9 subs. But, yeah, it looked fairly strong. in principle, but there you go. In practice, obviously not. But yeah, I mean, I think the side picks itself. I mean, Sykes would probably come back in on the right side, on the right of the 4-2-3-1 if he was fit. I think that would probably be the only change you could make.
Ian, you said to me before we started recording, there's passengers out there. I mean, for my part, Bell and Mometi were just, you know, poor old Tommy's up there by himself, but he doesn't get much help from either of those. Are there any other passengers there that you'd like to highlight at all as you saw it? Or is it just those two? You know, because you look at the midfield, we've got a Joe Williams playing for a contract. Well, he's playing at a level that we haven't seen consistently because he's been injured so much, although the last 12 months he's come back in. We've got Taylor Gardner-Hickman, a player that it looks like if the Vyman deal goes through, then the TGH is going to be consolidated. And our so-called best player, Jason Knight, where's the passengers and where's the disconnect in terms of the shape of the side?
I think the disconnect is in the wide areas. I mean, when Sykes is fit, Bell doesn't start, or Mometi doesn't start. But if we were to get, I mean, I'd be thinking for the league games, or certainly trying it, playing Roberts in front of Pring. Because if you want someone who can get up and down that line and can cross the ball with their left foot, then he's going to do it more than Mometi. Mometi doesn't do enough. I thought he was okay in the first half. He did get forward to reasonable effect. And let's be honest, in the first half, we could have gone in 2-0 up had we had the capability to finish or see a pass, and we didn't. So once you do that and you haven't taken advantage, it gives, I think Ryan Lowe really had to make those changes because the fans want him out. There was going to be all kinds of protests up there today. So I think he thought half time, it's that word you used earlier, honor bust, because it's when you're in a situation like that, you might as well go for it. I mean, the Americans call it a Hail Mary, don't they? But you might as well throw a Hail Mary and go for it. And that's exactly what he did, because that could have gone horribly wrong, but it didn't, because we didn't react and we didn't counter
well,
it.
I mean, and I heard Manning's interview after the game, and he talks about the players reacting, right? Well, no, I'm sorry. As soon as they come out, he should be bellowing instructions to those players to react to what's happened. I mean, he hasn't got a camera in the dressing room to preempt it until they get out there. But I bet he didn't, you know, he's got to wise up. This isn't League One. This is probably the fifth most challenging division in European football, right? And you will get found out. I heard a couple of callers on Radio Bristol saying, you know, he's being found out tactically, even though that is what his forte is his tactical and analysis. I think even Gary Hours called him out on that. In fact, it was Gary who said he should have reacted. He can't point a finger at the players not reacting when they come out with a different lineup, the opposition, can he? You first, Mark, and then back to you, Ian. Mark.
I think the difference in the second half was that, and you compare that with a West Ham game, you've got Bristol City are quite lightweight, apart from the centre of the mid, you know, centre of the pitch, you know, with Joe Williams and our defenders. So when we get the ball into wide areas, you need to pass the ball quickly. If you leave the players isolated, like Bell and Mometi were, especially in the second half, they've got nowhere to go. There's no pass on. They're not looking to go down the line. You waste the pass. You come inside, the ball gets played across, and nothing happens. It's all safe and in front of the Preston defence. So that's the problem. I mean, if you looked at the difference between that and the Watford game, Conway, Mometi, and Pring combining well, you know, quick one touch passing, and there, you know, there was always a pass on, there was always an overload. It just didn't happen today. That's where the bravery, that's where the player's responsibility comes in. As for tactical changes, I think, you know, where Preston probably went with a 3-4-3 in the second half, they could have brought James on to try and be more bullish in the centre of the midfield and another central midfielder to try and turn the ball over. But let's look at it. And we've said this time and time again, when teams let City have the ball, when we dominate possession, we look quite poor because we can open teams up.
No.
Birmingham did that. And Preston did that again today. Then they made that tactical switch. And both goals are from defensive howlers as much as the way Preston played. Yes, Preston's substitutions made a huge difference, but both goals were from really poor defensive play.
We'll get into the action.
Yeah, the tactical switch was that I think in midfield where he could have made a change there, but apart from that, I don't think that, you know, there's not much more quality on the bench really, David. That's the problem. We just don't have the quality in depth. That's not there.
I mean, who should react when the teams come out and there's been a major structure change in the way the opposition have lined up? I mean, it's for the coach, Ian, isn't it, to say, you know, quickly call your captain over and say, right, they've changed this, we need to do this, we need to do that, and react pretty damn quick, yeah?
Yeah, I agree 100%, because when they said on Radio Bristol, you know, Liam Manning didn't see that coming, Gary Harris said what he should have done. He had three big blokes in white shirts stood right in front of him. And that's partially flippant, but it's absolutely true at the same time. Mm. But people, you know, there's people criticising Manning, and then, you know, harking back to Pearson. We were playing for 2.5 years like that under Pearson. So, you know, let's not... He's come in. He hasn't had a transfer window at all to bring in better players, the ones he needs. Nigel Pearson signed or re-signed every single one of those players out there. I'm counting the ones that got new contracts as well. So the likes of Max O'Leary, Zach Viner, Cameron Pring, all Nigel Pearson signings. And when people say, well, no, wait a minute, they came through the academy. Yeah, but had he not wanted them to stay, they'd have been gone. And he wanted them, so they got better contracts. So they're his guys. Now, nobody out there is a Liam Manning player. And he can't come out and say it for obvious reasons. But if he's thinking, Christ, yeah. I mean, Matty James is ideal if you're hanging on to a 1 or 2 nil lead and you want to slow things down, keep hold of the ball in the middle of the field. Nice short passes, no pressure, no threat, no worry. He ain't a playmaker and he wouldn't tell you he is. So, what we're starting to hear now is there's too many conspiracy theories or whatever, you know. I mean, Kieran on long here, thanks for listening, Kieran, but to say there's been no activity in the transfer market is just totally incorrect. We had a deal done for Finazaz, £2.5 million, wages agreed, all the rest of it. He said, well, I want to go to Borough.
Oh, right. Hang on. You're right there. He wanted to play under Michael Carrick, right? That was another part of the attraction, playing under Carrick. Well,
I was told he had two mates there last year on loan, and they said they loved it. And that's one of the reasons he went.
All right. But, I mean, is Liam the sort of manager that a player looking to learn and improve his game, right? Is Liam a player that will, you know, will players see what John Lansdowne saw in Liam, that he's one of our most bright and up-and-coming managers, a tactical whiz and analysts and God knows what else?
Well, yeah. Every manager, it's all about results. And I didn't see people queuing up that were good players queuing up to come here under Nigel Pearson.
No.
And well, if you look at some of the...
Jason Knight came, Rob Dickey came. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the players like Nathan Baker, until he got injured, he re-signed for him. You know, so, I mean, look, you're right, Ian. We were bored under Pearson, but we haven't got any better. And we've had a quarter of a season now of Liam Manning.
Hang on. Wait a minute. You're saying we haven't got any better. We weren't saying that after we beat Hull, Watford and Sunderland, three on the spin, and picked up nine points.
You're right.
So let's just all calm down and start being a little bit measured about what we're achieving. We had good times and bad times. Not many good, it got to be said, under Pearson for 2.5 years. And during that period, he could have been fired and the fans wanted him out on Boxing Day against WBA, right? They were screaming for his head when he threw Atkinson under the bus, right? So let's not have any of this, oh, you know, I loved him. He was wonderful. No, he did a brilliant job.
And you're right.
Because
you're
he didn't. Now, the job of the manager, just to be clear, the manager, first team coach, their job is to get results for the first team. I'm not worried about anything else. Get jobs, win games. It's about results and performances. Simple as that. Don't let anything else distract or cloud the issue. That's what their job is. And John Lansdowne and Gavin Marshall were 100% clear about that. You can't knock them for saying that. Now, they decided to make a change. A lot of clubs have, and they're going for the Manning-style manager. And Manning's the fourth youngest manager in the Championship. Right. Now, Ipswich did it. They brought in McKenna. Didn't work right away. He had his first season. Following season, they got promoted. Right. And now look at them. They're tearing up trees. So, you know, you either have a bit of patience and say it's going to work, but he's going to need windows. He needs to bring in the right type of players. And if we're not prepared to do that, it doesn't. You might as well make you manager, Dave, because we can all be a team.
You're right. Ian, look, you're absolutely right. We do, you know, I'm guilty of it. I know Fev says I'm guilty of it. And people say on the forum, we ebb and flow. We're up and down. Or I'll tell you
why it is, David. It's because we've got a big city mentality that's not backed up historically by anything apart from pre-First World War and four seasons between 1976 and 1980. We just can't back it up. So that's the problem. We think a lot of ourselves because we got a nice ground. We got, you know, one of the richest men in the country is our owner. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter a hoop because it's results on the pitch. I like the type of football that Liam Manning's trying to play, but it's having the players to utilise that. At the moment, it requires players to pass the ball quickly and be brave on the ball, make things happen, and we're just not doing that. But we're not a bad side. I don't think we're far away from being a good side. The defensive statistics back that up.
Yeah.
But we can't score goals. But it's this stupid thing with the fan base, reflected by the forums. You know, we sacked a manager in the middle of the season, and people said, well, we sacked a manager where we're in a good position, but we weren't doing anything for 4 years. The club made a bold move, and that's maybe created a division, but our problems stem from navel gazing, having this big opinion of ourselves that's not backed up by results. Until we sort that out and have something to actually, some results to actually back up this our nice grounds and big mentality, it won't make a difference. But we need some patience. But the board now have got to bring in some recruits that make a difference. So we'll just have to wait and see.
All right. Well, we'll talk about the window in a minute. Let's get into the action a little bit because, again, don't want to talk too much about it. I mean, we started well. I think it was Williams put TGH through one-on-one. Tommy was screaming.
He took the ball off McCann brilliantly.
Yeah.
McCann's won their free and behind the one. So it was like a kamikaze pilot smacked straight into him and stole the ball brilliantly. And he's played the ball through to Taylor Garda Hitman between the centre backs. And if he just plays the ball sideways to Tommy, gives the goalkeeper something to think about.
1-0 game one.
He could hit the ball. I did the ball near post into the corner. He decides to hit it across and he's pushed it away. Poor old Tommy's probably crying, thinking, just pass the ball to me and it's 1-0.
We had a sort of half chance. Pring did well, one of his few sorties down the left on 10 minutes, put a cross in. Jason Knight just couldn't get a ball out from under his feet. But people have been saying about Zach Viner, you said earlier in the pod, Ian, he didn't look on his game today. And on the 19th minute, Ozamek, if he'd have got a better touch, Viner wasn't at his best there, was he? The lad almost got away, were it not for a poor touch on the ball.
If you look, I think it was Joe Williams who played a fantastic through ball for the Preston striker between Viner and Dickey. In fact, I think he lobbed it over their head, didn't he? Mm. So, you know, don't just blame the defender. When it goes over his head and the striker is away between them, it's not his fault. No. You know, why the hell? I think it was Joe Williams. Come back, all I said, if it wasn't.
I think he did that on the 8th minute. He played the ball to Osmich. And I think then it was played wide. And I think Whiteman came in, but his shot was blocked for a corner. And then I think the ball was played through behind behind Viner for that chance. Yeah. So it's two separate instances, yeah. I think.
Yeah. We had another good chance on 25 minutes from a corner that Sam Bell had done well, taken by Knight. Taken by TGH. And Ian, that was a good save by, was it Woodman, the goalkeeper? Good flick by Jason Knight at the near post. I mean, those were that and the earlier one. 2-0 up and they're done. And the manager's Ryan Lowe is being sacked in the morning, isn't he?
Yeah. And that's exactly right. And it, as you alluded to earlier on, we've been, for the last 40, 50 years I've been watching, we've been the team to play when things are going pear-shaped. Don't worry, lads, Bristol City are turning up. We'll get a result and on we go. We'll have an unbeaten run. And yeah. We saw it 40-odd years ago on Match of the Day with Kenneth Wollstone commentating against Crystal Palace. I don't think they'd won in 20-odd games. And they came down to Ashton Gate, beat us 1-0. So it's not that's nothing new. But unfortunately, it was after the Lord Mayor's show today, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Anyway, let's get into that. Max did a good save on 37 minutes when across from Holmes. He was a good little player. He used to play for Derby, I think. Or was it Huddersfield? Is it Dwayne Holmes, an American? And Sam missed kick, but Miller got the ball. Max saved with his feet. But start of the second half, we've talked about them totally changing the shape of the team. And we didn't react to it. I've written down here on my notes a bit. Slow start. 56 minutes. Burst through from midfield by Knight. I mean, that was a nasty little... Well, it was a professional foul, wasn't it, Mark? I mean, he literally tripped him up. It was the sort of thing you'd see on a school pitch, wasn't it?
Yeah, just near the penalty area. Knight in full flight, running towards goal. And, he took him out, Will Keane. Horrible foul, taking one for the team. It's one, you know, if you're a supporter of sin bins like me, that'd be 10 minutes in the sin bin straight away. You know, it's ridiculous taking one for the team. Yeah. It's just not punishable. Yellow cards don't cut it for me because it's this one, it's a professional foul. What's professional about that? It's just bloody annoying. But you've got to make the most of it and the free kick, I think from Mometi had the pace really, but Woodman got across and fielded it quite easily at his near post.
Yeah. I thought a couple of people have said on the text feed, Mometi, other than early doors closing somebody down with a high press and forcing getting a player to concede a corner, I thought he was poor today. Very, 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 very lightweight.
Well, he played well in the first half because he linked up well with Pring, and I think there was a couple of instances he got the ball over, but it's the difference was it's that next pass. Somebody has got to take the next pass when you open up the flanks like we do. And he did quite well in the first half. The second half, completely pinned to the byline. There's nobody supporting him. He faded out, but there was nobody helping him at all. That's the difference.
I sometimes feel, Mark, that players appear reluctant to want to pass in the ball because they seem to think his lack of physicality, he's just going to get knocked off it if there's a player.
Well,
we never see him running onto the ball into space.
It has to do with passing, Dave.
Yeah. He didn't pass it to Taylor Gardner Hickman.
Danny Harris said on the text feed, Anis lost the ball every time he had it. All right, Ian, let's come to you for the first goal. Long ball out. You're going to be a chief member of the George Tanner fan club, but it was a lovely little inside header for George, wasn't it, that set Keane up and everybody's piling in on Max O'Leary. But take us through the goal as you saw it. A bad one?
Long ball. George Tanner competes, wins the ball in air, but heads it backwards and inside, which is the last two things you ever want to do. If you head it backwards and outside, that's not usually fatal. But he headed it backwards and inside. Rob Dickey decided he wouldn't follow Reese. I don't know where he thought he smelt or something like that, but he was 3 yards away from Reese when he ran onto the ball. Was it Reese or Keane? They both had ponytails, didn't they? Keane, I think, yeah. Ran onto the ball. Rob Dickey just stopped.
Yeah.
And because I think he thought Max had it. Max, I think, thought the ball was coming to him a lot quicker than it was. So between the three of them, they made a right mons of it. Now, if Max comes out and knocks that player over, he's very likely going off. A little bit like the one at West Ham, although the one at West Ham was a better pass and a better run. But so had Rob Dickey followed Will Keane, he'd have cleared the ball. But I think Max was off his line way too quick. And I think he felt the ball was coming to him.
Yeah.
And it didn't. So I'd put that one down to the three of them. It was just chronic defending, and it was a symptom of our second half. Simple as that.
Yeah, well, talking about the second half, and as I say, there's plenty to talk about outside of the game, looking forward. As Mark, the subs were made. First subs.
Can I say something about the goal?
I'm coming to you next. All right, talk about that goal then, Mark, just to add.
Yeah, I think the other problem is when the ball's played forward by Lindsay, the number six, left-footed. I mean, he's in the middle of his own half. He plays this. It's really like a reach here. You know, you'd say, you know, it's a reacher of a ball. And I think it's either Frocker, Janssen or Reese goes up with Tanner and Fortin, he heads the ball backward. But Viner is too close to Tanner. He's going in to try and win the ball, but it's behind him. But Dickey is just not quick enough. So he allows Keane to make the inside run because he sees O'Leary coming off his line, but there's such a big gap because Viner's gone towards Tanner and Frocker Janssen. There's this huge gap between them. Keane runs into that, but really it's one against two. So they or three if you count Max O'Leary, they should sort it out. So Max coming off his line isn't a problem, but he completely misses the ball. He just misses the ball completely. He misses his clearance. So the ball's past him. Now, of course, Dickie's on the wrong side of Keane. So all he's got to do is once he's pushed the ball past, is just pass it into an empty net. But Viner makes a mistake there because he leaves that space. They should be tighter together, containing Keane and seeing that long ball coming forward. So if there is a mistake, if the forward heads the ball on, which really he should have done, but Tanner does, one of them takes the ball. It should be as simple as that. But because he done, O'Leary makes the decision, but it looks a poor one because he misses the ball. But it's Viner and Dickey's problem, I think. Not really O'Leary's. O'Leary's a scapegoat because he doesn't make the clearance.
All right. I'll go, since you had a few extra words there on the goal, Ian. Mark, I'll come back to you, Ian. The substitutions, and we'll talk about the second goal with you and then the second goal with you as well, Mark. But Ian, the substitutions, McCrory, Wells and James coming on for Mehmeti Bell and Taylor Gardner-Hickman. I mean, look, good to see McCrory get on, but within 4 minutes, game's out of sight, isn't it? You know, take us through that second goal.
I'm not sure I can even remember the second goal. I think I was that annoyed by then.
Keane at the near post, flick, 2-0.
Yeah, that was it in a nutshell. I mean, they had a little period of possession. I thought when they got the ball down and played football, they weren't too bad a team, Preston, I've got to be honest. But yeah, it was a cross from the right-hand side. We had two things in that situation. Mark the player in the middle, stop the cross. We didn't either. And once again, and just so we get our victims out of the way, George Tanner was nowhere near that.
Mark, your take on the goal. You've got a forensic analysis.
Right, on the right-hand side of the penalty area, you've got Potts and Reece Jacobson and Pring and Dickey. So I think Potts goes towards the area. Dickey's puts no pressure on Potts. He passes it back to Reece Jacobson. No pressure from Pring or one or the other. So, you know, it's an easy cross to play into the area from Reece Jacobson. And what Viner is doing, he lets Keane wander past him at the near post. O'Leary's got no chance once he does that. So bad play all round. soft, no pressure on the ball from the cross, and Viner completely loses Will Keane at the near post. All he's got to do is stand up to him and stop the cross coming in. Get goal side, stop that cross coming in, and protect Max O'Leary. None of those three players do it. 2-0, game over.
Where was Pring on that goal, Mark?
They were, but Pring and Dickey were in the left back position facing Potts, who had the ponytail, and Reece Jacobson, the Danish midfield player who scored against us 2 years ago in that 2-2 draw. And neither of them put any pressure off the ball. They stand off, both of them. So it's just a pass back from Potts to Reece Jacobson. He gets a cross in. Easy as pie. But Viner, he's got to do better at the near post. That's pathetic defending from Viner. Letting the guy just walk across him and take the ball. I mean, it's a good way. I mean, that's what you want your forwards to do. I'd like to see our forwards do that, you know, near post. But the defender's got to make it difficult for him. Yeah. Just stand up to him. Because if you stay tight, it's very hard for him to turn across you. You know, I remember a few years ago, before VAR, what defenders used to do. Stay tight and let a defender fall back onto them. just stay tight. Can't do a thing.
Yeah. Talking about VAR, nothing to do with this game, and I'll ask each of you a quick question on this. First of all, did either of you see the goal that Luton equalised with last night? Mark, yes or no? Right. Mark, was that a foul on the goalkeeper? Or as somebody said, who was picked up by Keith Hackett, he was getting nowhere near the ball anyway, which is what I thought. Keith Hackett said, no, it's a foul. Doesn't matter that he was nowhere near the ball, but that should have been disallowed, particularly with VAR then, Mark. Yes?
Yeah, the keeper gets tipped. So he gets pushed. He sort of tipped away from the ball. So that's a foul. If it's a foul, it's not a goal.
So even though he was nowhere near.
I don't get it. If there's a foul on the goalkeeper, the goalkeeper is pushed from behind. The guy is goal side. He pushes pushes James Trafford. It's a foul.
Yeah.
So why isn't that goal disallowed? Don't understand it.
Foul every day of the week.
Yeah. What you've got to look at when the cross comes in. Where's Adebayo looking? He's looking over his shoulder, he's looking behind him, and he takes two steps towards the keeper who's coming out and obstructs him, basically. So for me, you give a foul for obstruction and give a free kick to Burnley. So that you a lot of it is looking. If he'd have jumped for the ball from where he was or taken two steps towards the ball and jumped, I'd have said, no, nothing wrong with it. But if you watch it back, look where he's looking. He glances behind him like that, sees the keeper's coming in and just gives it a back. Yeah. And there's no way. It don't matter if the keeper's 6'6" or 9'6". He's not going to get over the top of that bloke. No. And I don't think Adebayo even jumped. I think he just moved backwards toward him. Yeah. Because let's be honest, he is one blinking unit, that bloke, isn't he?
Oh God,
but he's better than Harry Cornick. He proved.
since we're talking about referees, I thought Sam Barot, the guy who refereed it today, I thought he had a decent game. You know, I didn't notice him.
Yeah, if you don't know, it's a referee. I think it's anyway, good. Look, keeps the game flowing.
That's my notes on today's game. Right, we're done with that. I'm not doing a solo on the clarinet just yet. I don't feel competent enough to do the solo on the clarinet just yet. But
thank God.
We've got a break from league action. We had our big day out in London.
I wish we stopped saying that. You make it sound like it's like an Enid Blyton book. Five go down to the seaside, David.
Famous five go to London. I didn't go last week. I made that decision as soon as a draw was made, and it was all sort of everybody go up there. And yeah, call me a Grinch. I know you went. And I know you did, and you had a very nice day up there, as 9,000 people did, as it turned out. But you know, Brentford, Bournemouth, and Brighton, they're playing West Ham in a league game every week. It's not their big day out up in London, our cup final, but our cup final comes to Ashton Gate on Tuesday night against West Ham.
I wouldn't say it's like a cup final. I don't look at that at all. We've earned our rights. Sorry, I'm not Ian. We've earned our right to be in the replay.
Look, listen, if we, I want us to beat West Ham. I want City to win every game, you know, and typical City after a shit show like today was in the main, right? We'll probably go and beat them. We'll probably go and beat West Ham, right? They're without Bowen and Paqueta, or whatever his name is.
Mavropanos, Antonio.
Yeah.
All
I suppose you're signing some Dutch forward as well, aren't they? That's Rob Newman territory. But obviously,
signing Rob Newman.
No, he's there.
Yeah, Agard and Kudus are out there. They're at the African Cup of Nations, so that'll help us. If Danny Ings plays like he did against us, we might be all right.
We've got a very good chance on Tuesday, and I've got to say it's a chance to keep our season alive only for a fortnight. Because if we do,
what
do
you mean it's dead?
Well, it could well be. I think we've got to get 2 points a game for the rest of the season to get in the playoffs. But Mark, you first. Do you think Liam will be tempted to take on board what Ian and, dare I say, a lot of people are saying on here, change the formation? Do you think he'll make any changes Tuesday night? You first, Mark.
I don't think he'll necessarily make any changes Tuesday night because we won't have as much of the ball, which will give us a chance. Because it's a cup game, I think you'll see a different game. So it's a league game. I think with the players that he's got, I think we need to play with a two or one much closer to Tommy Conway because nothing's happening at the moment. We can't hope every week that teams let us have the ball. When they come to Ashton Gate, they'll just defend deep. I mean, some teams won't, but a lot of teams, the bottom half, they'll just defend deep and ask us to break them down. I mean, look at Norwich. Norwich are challenging for the playoffs. When they came to us the other week, they were rubbish. We gave them the game, really, but it's down to lack of goals. Yeah. If we can make an improvement on that, we will move up the league. I don't think we'll be challenging for the playoffs. But if we're stuck with the squad that we got, I think there need to be some changes. Right. Okay, well, we need to make a tactical tweak.
We're talking a bit about the transfer. Yeah, we're talking a bit about the transfer window. Go to you, Ian. Changes? Any Tuesday? Surprise West Ham? Maybe playing three at the back or not?
No, not unless Sykes is fit. And my understanding is he won't be fit until the Watford game. No, I don't think he can change much. What he might do is possibly he could do what I've suggested and bring Roberts in front of Pring if we want to be a bit more secure on the left-hand side to start with. Who you'd play instead of Sam Bell, I don't really know. But we know that Manny rates Mometi, but like somebody said, when I said that the other day, somebody said, yeah, but he'll learn. You could always switch Mometi to the right. So as far as I know, the only other player that we've got who could possibly play on that right side, real curveball, would to bring in Ephraim Yeboah.
I was just going to say Yeboah as being the forgotten man of Bristol City.
Well, you know, it's a cup game. Why not?
Yeah,
because Sam, I think, worked really hard today. But he didn't add anything in the final third. Mometi did a bit in the first half, but disappeared in the second. And that's Anis all over, I'm afraid. It's okay for a winger to be mercurial, but he absolutely abuses the privilege. So, you know, that you might see that. I can't see he'll do much else. He might bring in, I don't know, will he bring in James instead of Taylor Gardner-Hickman? Will he bring James in instead of Williams if Williams is struggling to play three games in a week, which we know Joe does. And I would have said, you know, I had a conversation with you in the week, Dave, and I said, you offer me 6 points from Watford and Preston, I'll take a defeat against West Ham. I can't see too many changes. And somebody had said earlier on, will we get a player in before Tuesday? I don't think so. Obviously, when you bring somebody in this stage of the season, there's a chance that they're cup tied anyway. Another change, Benny's just said, play Conway or Wells on the right? No, I wouldn't, honestly. I like I said before, I'd go with two strikers, but that and
that's Harry Cornick. Harry Cornick.
He could play there. I don't think he'd be very effective, but at least you've got the long throw and he does work, although he's not all that, is he? So yeah, I think we'll have one in next week. And possibly two, but you know, they'll have to be integrated and all that. But I'd be a fan of saying, right, play them. You know, we can't score any less than none, so let's, you know, have a week preparing, because if we don't beat West Ham, we haven't got a game then until we play Coventry the following Tuesday, have we?
Sorry?
If we don't play beat West Ham. Yeah.
We don't play Coventry.
Coventry are in the fourth round, are they? That's
yeah.
right.
Yes. Yeah.
And our game, if we do beat West Ham, we play on the Friday, don't we? Yeah, is that right? I saw that.
Well, I know it's the 27th and the 28th is what.
Yeah,
I got
a feeling. I saw it listed somewhere that we're one of the games that plays Friday, so we'd be playing Friday.
We got Leeds on the following Friday, so that makes it a bit difficult. Yeah, Friday the 2nd.
We'd be playing Friday, Tuesday, Friday. Yeah, after. So it'd be Saturday.
We've got West Ham. Then we've got Watford. And at the moment, if we get knocked out, we then got nothing. For until the following Tuesday, which is away to Coventry.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah. Anyway,
so
and by which time, by the time we play Leeds, the transfer window will have been shut. And by the time most of you are listening to this, it will be Monday the 15th. So that's as near as, damn it, halfway through the window. Activity. Okay, we've talked about missing out on Azaz. I think there was another Wolves guy called Kundal that was linked. But that was somebody
that we didn't go after. That was just a bit of agency.
I'm not as informed on stuff like that. Benny's said a word on Vyman. Great servant, but time to go. Good deal if we get TGH for less. Ian, agree?
100%.
Yeah, Mark.
Yeah, 100%. You know, TGH comes in permanently. I'd just like to say about Vyman, great to see him get his his last goal for City was in that 4-1 win. He was an exceptional one-on-one finisher. I'll never forget the hat-trick he got up at Sheffield United in March 2019. Three superb goals. I mean, the final one, he takes a throw-in and then runs across the pitch and takes a return ball. He got another hat-trick against Millwall, I think New Year's Day a couple of years ago when we came back to beat Millwall. There was something for the museum. We never do that. So a great servant for City over 5.5 years. Great, great move for 32-year-old player, and very good luck to you, Andreas. You served City proud.
Well, it's only a loan move.
Well, yeah, but I mean, his deal runs out at the end of the year. I mean, I think he may have triggered another year on his contract.
No, I think what I've read that extension was triggered by a number of appearances that he made. So it was in the club's interest maybe not to play him. Otherwise, even if they didn't want him, they'd have had him for that extra year.
Yeah, I mean, I'd expect him to go at the end of the season. I don't know if he'll stay at West Brom. I mean, financially, they're
he'll be a free agent. If he's out of contract,
they're in dire straits. Yeah. So that's why they're bringing in Andreas Vyman and not anybody else. So that's the state that they're in.
Ian, Annie has said on here, manager said he expects some business with War of Watford. I should bloody hope so. We got players lined up. And Danny Harris has also said, Vyman must be on high wages. So although he took a pay cut, would it be fair to say that Vyman going between now and the end of the season has freed up in today's market, far more depressed than when Andy signed that reduced wage contract anyway, has freed up the wages such that there might be the capability of bringing in two players, League One level, for Andy's wage?
The short answer to your question is yes. That was part of doing the deal. That, and reducing the amount that we pay for Taylor Gardner-Hickman. And I've heard some figures of 2 million, quoting, like we put 700,000 down and we got to give them another 1.3, right? Yeah. Take it from me, that's complete cobblers.
Yeah.
All right. So it's not anything like that. It'd be closer to somewhere between 700 grand and a mil.
Yeah.
Probably 700 grand plus some add-ons. So Andy's on about, if I had to guess, I know what he was on before was a lot, same as Naki, be on about
15 grand, 14. Yeah.
14. Yeah. So if you brought two players in like Liam Knight from League One,
that's my mistake.
You probably get about two. At that level, you know, because football the wages in the EFL aren't what they were, and they never will be. Those days are gone. Those days are gone. So I think I know City have been trying really hard, and I'm hearing that from sources well away from the club, at the other end, if you will. So, but you can have deals lined up, and then the guy says, well, I want to go somewhere else. Or he goes home and says, I'm going to go down and sign for Bristol City. And his missus said, you bloody ain't, because we're staying here because I've got the kids at school. So All kinds of things like that can happen. So there's many a slip between twixt cup and lip, is I think it was William Shakespeare said that, wasn't it?
I think it was you, Ian.
Or was it Nigel Pearson? I don't know. But,
Jay Hopes has said on here, when McCrory is fully fit, I hope he starts most games. I bloody hope so as well, because he cost us £2 million, allegedly.
And he can play a number of positions. But First of all, you set out your strategy. Like, I mean, if you remember, George Tanner's been replaced now twice. Kane Wilson replaced him, and I think he's at Derby now, isn't he, Mark?
Yeah, I checked. Yeah. He was in their lineup the other week. Yeah, looks like.
Yeah, so he replaced him, never played, couldn't get in the team, not good enough. So Ross came in, he's injured. Now, all the reports I've had from Scotland is he's a player. Now, what they said is they preferred him holding midfield. Because he can get box to box as well. Well, obviously, when his energy's back, Christ, the bloke hadn't kicked a ball in competitive football for what, 6-8 months?
Yeah.
So, because obviously he attended a City fitness and conditioning camp. So, you know, I hope we don't go to Austria this year. Let's put it that way in pre-season. And you know, we have better quality of games than against the Three Lions and the Dog and Duck.
That didn't help us.
If we could, right. Let's hope he is all that, because we'll have to give Aberdeen about £2 million with all the if, buts, and maybes. Everything I've heard about the bloke is really positive, and that's from people who don't give a monkey's. Don't give a monkey's about Bristol City.
I know Tomo.
There's a lot of them about.
Yeah, Tomo saw the under-21s and said that he put in a decent show. One of our players who's out of contract summer 25 is Tommy Conway. I think I'm right in saying, yeah. Now Tommy captured the press headlines with a well taken goal last week. It would have been nice if he could have followed it up on. To this afternoon's game with a goal. Yeah. He's in the shop window again Tuesday night against West Ham. We should really be trying to sign Tommy on a contract extension. Otherwise, you know, it's sort of, if he doesn't move this window and doesn't sign, we've got to move him on in the summer if we're going to max out, haven't we?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I think Tommy's momentum has been spoiled by injuries. You know, he did his he tore a hamstring, didn't he, against Swansea last season in the cup when he was going really well. And you know, he was at that time he was partnered with Naki Wells, and that was looking quite promising, so that ruined that. And this season obviously didn't start until didn't really get going until he came back. You know, we played that game against Rotherham, so his momentum stalled a little bit. His goal's probably been boosted by penalties. I think he really needs to be doing better if he wants that contract extension. So only goals, I think, you know, will add to his value. So he needs to take that opportunity to do better, really. It's as simple as that. He's got, he's got to earn it. So, you know, if he starts scoring a few goals, I think, that would be a good idea to make him an offer, because, yeah, you're right. But then, you know, other teams who come in, it'll get him for a bid that matches City's expectations, and then they're going to have the same problem on their hands, aren't they? Going to have the same player.
If you had to put a number on Tommy's value now, what if somebody came? Yeah, if he's Scottish international, yeah, and yeah, if somebody came in for
So's Lyndon Dykes as well, but yeah, I wouldn't put that.
All right, what's a price that would make us think on Tommy?
Well, is that market value? It's going to be his market value at the moment. It's probably no more realistically. His market value is probably between 1 and 3 million, but the club would want about 5 to part with him, I think. Oh, but that's not realistic. That's like, right, you know, that's not overpricing your house, isn't it? Yeah. But his market value is less than 3 million easy, because he's not doing it on the pitch. Harsh but fair, I think. What do you think, Ian?
Ian, what do you think, Ian? You know, Tommy, the contract situation, it is summer 25, yeah? What do you think?
Well, at the moment, I would say that you're not going to maximise his value, because strikers are are recruited on the basis of goals and assists. And Tommy's not got enough in open play. But as I say, that's not entirely his fault.
No,
because, you know, I said earlier on the text feed, we could have had Messi up front today. I don't think it'd make a blind bit of difference, because we just wouldn't have given him the ball, or we'd have kicked it 3 feet above his head. So just quickly, when we're looking at, and I wouldn't think we'd be offered much for Tommy this time around, and that's the difficulty. If I was Tommy, I'd be looking at signing another contract here, improving my point. Liam Manning's brought in the players that he wants. There's a bit of rumour going around about Scott Twine at Burnley. Okay, he wants to come. We want him, but the clubs are too far apart on value, because all this stuff you've seen about, they want 2.5 million, they want double that. Yeah. So,
and he wants to come. Thing, he is one player whose career blossomed under Liam Manning. So,
what did Burnley pay for him from MK Dons, Ian?
4 million.
Yes, yeah, so he want that back and more then.
Well, he can play where he played against us, which was in Mometi's position, but he can also play as a 10. And he's creative in goal scoring, and that's what we need.
And that's what Tomo said on here. He gets the feeling that Liam's looking for a number 10 rather than a lump of a striker.
That's where Scott Twine can play. The problem is, unless there's some kind of we'll have him and we'll do the payments over 3 years or something, then we're not going to get him out of Burnley in a hurry.
Okay.
Hull might think he's moving because they've signed Carvalho, by the way, I'm told by a journalist up at Hull, is on 75 grand a week at Liverpool, and Hull are paying 100% of the wages.
But they're paying then. It's a loan move, isn't it? Yes?
Yes.
Right? It's a loan move, yeah, and in pure wages, never mind loan fees. Somebody picked me up on my saying the cup run could fund a loan player, but 75 grand for 20 weeks, that's half of January, February, March, April, first half of May, that's £1.5 million. If that gets them into the playoffs and promotion, it's money well spent. Agreed?
If they get in the playoffs, well, where are they on FFP? That's a big gamble, isn't it?
No, but if they don't, let me just finish my point. Mark, if they don't get to the playoffs, right, they haven't got his wages beyond the 6th of May.
That's a statement of intent. I think that pushes Scott Twine down the pecking order. So I think Scott Twine would think Carvalho's come in. statement signing. I'm not going to get much game time here now. But then, of course, it comes down to Burnley. We haven't got any cards to play if Burnley want that money. That's stupid money. They just want to get their money back and more, don't they? I mean, they got Twine last season. They also got Obafemi from Swansea, who's done nothing. Players like Manuel Benson, who hadn't appeared either. So, you know, they want their money back because, I mean, they're likely going to go back down, aren't they? Yeah. So they're looking to bounce, have some money to bounce back to.
Yeah. Sorry, Ian, you were going to say something then when I was having my little tirade.
I mean, that is the word around Hull. I'm not saying that I've hacked into their accounts and I know exactly what they're paying in, but that, you know, if they're obviously paying top whack because they've got guys in there from Turkey and they're not earning 10 bob a week.
Oh, so they're going for it. They're going
for it. On the basis of wages, right? I can't remember of whole. I know they sold that lad to with a double barreled name. I can't remember to Brentford for about 16 million.
King Lewis Potter,
good player, but they sold him for about 16 million. So I don't think they're in a position where. If City agreed to buy Twine, that they'd necessarily buy him. In other words, put in a counter bid. But I don't know. All kinds of stuff is going on. Everybody keeps saying it's a difficult window. So I'll say it is. Well, it is a difficult window. But I think all the windows are getting more difficult because the money at the top of the game is absolutely huge. And then you start coming down here. And everybody wants to have at least that one season in the Premier League and the one season of parachute money. The problem is, as soon as you go up, your wage bill goes, your skyrockets normally if you want the better players. And no agent in his right mind is going to do a deal that says, my player will take a 50% cut if we get relegated. That must be very, very tough. And if financial fair play is based over the 3 years. I think since the owner has gone into Hull, I think their wage bill would have gone up significantly. But I can't remember if Hull have spent big on transfer fees. So perhaps he's doing it that way. And that's
maybe that's something that when next time Dave Fevs comes on, I'll prep him beforehand to see if they've done that. Loan signings from the Premier League, unlikely, I would say, wouldn't you, Ian?
Because we couldn't subsidise, unless they subsidise the wages tremendously, we're not going to be able to afford it, are we, Ian? No way.
Well, possibly we could. But for example, Finazaz was an Aston Villa player and we were going to sign him. And he's come from the Premier League.
But sign him, not loan him on his existing
wage. That's great.
Wage, yeah?
But what I'm saying is, if they have a player, if they have a player that we're interested in, perhaps there's a deal to be done and perhaps we can do a deal on half the wages. I don't, there's all kinds of deals you can do if they want to get
it. It's a busy week for Brian.
But it's also about availability, isn't it? And that's the trouble with January.
Sure. Everybody's got to be suited to it. You know, the player's got to want to come out. The club's got to think, we can release him. And Villa were obviously thinking, well, this Finazaz, he's not bad in the Championship, but he ain't going to get in our team.
No.
They got blokes 50, 60 million in their first team. So he's not going to get in their first team. So we'll take the 2.5 million, and that's going to be stage payments. And at least he's off the books. We don't have to pay him wages or worry about it. So, it was a win-win for everybody. Well, apart from poor old Plymouth, because they lost him and Kundal, albeit... Kundal was. I think he only started 2 or 3 games for Plymouth. The rest of the time, he came on as a sub, which is why we didn't want to sign him. Because for people saying, "Well, if he can't get in Plymouth side, how is he going to get in ours?
How is he going to be better than what we've got? Clubs in the bag and all of that stuff." Okay, guys. Yeah. Look, I think we're done for this evening. Anyway, Kieran, you're more than welcome. Direct message me on Twitter or on the fans forum if you fancied coming on and expressing your views, and everybody finally worked out how to show the text feed while we're going live as well, so hopefully people have viewed that as a bit of an addition. Annie as well, good to see you've started listening and making a contribution. I'd be more than happy to have you on the podcast as a guest sometime. Ian and Mark, I hope, will be
back.
Can
I just say one thing?
Yeah, go on.
We're going to be on national TV on Tuesday on BBC One. So yeah. If anybody can't get to the game and watch it, don't be put off by the fact that we're going to be referred to Bristol 9 times out of 10. Our club of our city of our size haven't been in the Premier League since 1980. It'll go on and on and on. So just ignore the noise and hope that our defenders play tighter and that we give some
I wonder if Jonathan Pearce would be given the honour of commentating on us.
I doubt it. He might be just a little bit too biased, but
It'd be good for Jonathan to have him on there. But I say the three of us and probably one other will be recording live on YouTube, etc. On Wednesday morning at 9 o'clock, we'll be doing that. So hopefully, I know I can. I'm sure you can as well, Mark and Ian. I know definitely.
Wouldn't miss it for the world, David. As long as you bring your clarinet.
No, I'll be doing it from the office on Monday. It won't be the clarinet.
Well, Andy Vyman would probably bring his Glockenspiel, wouldn't he, from Austria?
Yeah, I could do a duet with Andy. I could do a duet with Andy, couldn't I? Yeah, I mean, look, I just like to say with Andy that one season, the WSM. You know, you can't take that away from him. He was good, and he has been a good servant. He's always given 100%. Yeah, and he's probably given 110%, but that 10% was probably a lot of effort that he probably didn't need to do. But you know, and what have you. But good luck to Andy in the balance of his career. It's a big month coming up with the cup, and obviously some league games. You know, there's still 19 games to go in the league. And if we put in the sort of form like we did against Sunderland, Hull and Watford, then getting 2 points a game isn't beyond us, yeah? Players are coming back from injury. McCrory today. I think Ian will say Atkinson's back on the grass now, isn't he? And Benarous, did you tell me that, Ian? Or was that Tomo in the week?
Yeah, that's... I don't expect to see him anywhere near the first team until early Feb, though. The same with Cal Naismith.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I think Rob Atkinson, I mean, the guy's a monster in the air. That will give us a lot more opportunities from set pieces. But the guy's had an ACL. That's 12 months out from what looked an innocuous challenge up at
Sunderland. On the touchline up at the stadium.
Yeah, yeah. Right, guy just fell on top of it. It was...
We're hopeful. I'd like to think we're hopeful. And it'd be great to get... It was great to get a famous win. It won't be quite as big as beating Man United 6 years.
Or Leeds in 1974?
I was just going to say, 73-74 season, I finished reading Alan Dix's book, 50 Years in Football, Dix's book, and that season, 73-74, that cup run kept him in a job.
Dolman Harry Dolman would go, I think he'd go to the Windies, wouldn't he, for his Christmas holiday, spend a month out there. And he made a recommendation to the board not to extend Alan Dix's contract.
Yeah.
And they did. And I think Dolman came back. Instead of club chairman, he was then made club president, wasn't he?
That's right, because Robert Hobbs
took over. Actually, keeping Hobbs would have been a great thing if we.
He was quite a good chairman who was ousted by Stephen Keogh, and as they say, the rest is history.
Robert Hobbs, all he did, after the Coventry game in May 1977, he asked for new directors to come onto the board and make a minimum investment of £25,000, and he got hounded out of the club for it. But going back to Dix, that rescued his season, that result against Leeds in February 19th, 1974. And then 15, we built on that and we got promoted two seasons later.
50 bloody years ago, but there we go.
And that was the last time, David, that we got in the quarterfinals. We haven't done it since.
Yeah, it was. And, we'll talk about that nearer the time, actually. But Ian and Mark, thanks. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Get this up on
thanks to all our faithful followers. We love you.
It's on the podcast platforms ASAP. Bye bye, everyone, and speak to you all on Wednesday. All the best.
Take care.
God bless you. Good luck.
What if I've been unlucky? Really, I ain't got a thing. There's a time I always feel happy as a king. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When red robins are bubbing along. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead, get up. Get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin starts bobbing along.